Hello, this is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm your host, David Wilk, and today, June 17th, I have the pleasure of speaking with Lev Raphael. His new book is My Germany, published by the University of Wisconsin Press. Lev is the author of several other books, which we'll talk about today. How are you, Lev?
I'm doing great. How are you, David?
I'm very well. As we talked about just before we went on to recording, it is a cool and wet summer. Hopefully, we'll eventually see some warm air.
Well, if it gets too warm, then it'll be too distracting. I don't mind the rain. It helps me write.
Keeps you inside, you mean?
Yes, keeps me inside, keeps me at the computer, and then, you know, I play some moody Brian Ferry songs, and, you know, I'm all set.
So you write with music playing?
Yeah, sometimes at low levels. I mean, I'm not blasting. Although when I was younger, I used to blast, you know, Mata Hoople and David Bowie and you know, Deep Purple and anyone else.
Right.
Slam it.
All the young dudes?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that goes without saying.
Yeah, right. That's a great song, in fact.
And well, all the way to Memphis, actually.
Yeah.
That really got me ready to write.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's actually a pretty bouncy song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, it works the other way around. If I'm playing music, I can't concentrate. The music just takes me over. But, you know, everybody has a different style of working.
Well, that's what I always tell my writing students is that, you know, there's no correct way to do anything. There's no correct way to schedule your life you have to find what works for you. And if it does work, you know, don't let anyone criticize what works for you.
Right. Well, although that's difficult because you have the sort of what works for them is really not good. You know what I mean?
Well, that's possible too. Yes, absolutely. But, you know, I always look at the finished product and how much people are producing as well. And if the quality is high, then I think fine. You know, there are many people who will get up and work at very regular hours, you know, 8 to 10, have a coffee break, walk the dogs, come back, work till lunch, and, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. And I could never do that. But I'm happy for people who can. I'm a pretty anarchic writer in terms of setting my own schedule. The only thing that really will drive me is if I have a contract. Deadline. And, you know, it's like Johnson said that executions fearfully concentrate the mind. I think for writers, contract deadlines do the same thing.
I think that's probably a good thing. It's like having a paper due tomorrow. You're going to write that paper.
You must. Well, and, you know, I spent over a decade working for the Detroit Free Press and reviewing for other newspapers and magazines, and there's nothing like an editor calling you and saying, I need this review in 24 hours. You get it done.
Right. No, that's a good, I think for many people, that is the only way they get it done, although there is, as you said, everyone is different, and some people, when they're given a deadline like that, completely freeze up.
Right.
They just can't do it at all. So, but clearly for you, having the journalist or the journalistic work has given you good, essentially, training.
That and also the fact that I have consistently over, you know, the several decades of my career, I've worked across genres. So, you know, so I've worked in memoir and literary fiction and mystery and psychology and self-help and children's literature. And so when I am feeling stuck in one book or one type of work, I don't get freaked out. I don't worry about writer's block. I just shift to a different project and usually a different style or voice or genre. So it keeps me from feeling trapped in one thing.
That's actually maybe good advice for any writer. They may not have other jobs or other projects to work on, but in a way, what you would say is make one up.
Absolutely. Do something completely different. I mean, I think you have to avoid boredom. You have to avoid boring yourself, first of all. And it's just too easy to feel stuck, to feel trapped, to feel you're not making any progress. Well, drop it and move to something else.
Right.
Or just live your life. That's the other thing I would tell my students is, you know, go out. go for a run, go to the gym, go swimming, go to a movie, walk your dogs, do something. I mean, just drop it, because you'd still be working on it in your head anyway, unconsciously, or subconsciously, just let it go.
Well, this sort of leads into a good couple of questions or a line of questioning. This book, My Germany, is a memoir, and clearly different for you than writing fiction, or maybe similarly exploring the way you became who you are, but in a very different way. And I guess, you know, maybe you can talk a little bit about how you came to write this book. Maybe I should just preface that by saying to people who might be listening, you're a Jewish writer whose parents were both in the Holocaust, and that has framed, to a great extent, framed your life.
Obviously, and career.
And career. But, no one wants to necessarily be put in a box as who they are, but these are very important elements of your growing up and of who you became as an adult.
Definitely. I mean, it's a shaping influence. How couldn't it be? How could it not be? I mean, anyone whose parents survived any kind of tragedy is going to be shaped by their response to the tragedy and what happened to them. I fully expect to see some sort of literature coming out of Hurricane Katrina down the road. I mean, people whose families were affected by it. Think of the hundreds of thousands of people in one way or another who were changed by what happened. We've already seen film about it. I think we'll be seeing literature about it, fiction, essays, poetry down the road. The book is a memoir, the book is a travelogue, the book is a mystery. It combines three different genres, and what I seek to untangle is the shaping role of Germany as a concept and as a reality in my parents' life and in my own life. And so I weave together their stories in and out of World War II and afterwards with my story of trying to find out what their stories are. And on top of that, the newest layer is what it's been like for me to actually confront Germany, because I've had three books translated into German, and I've been in Germany three times on book tours, and they've been really astonishing experiences for me. So all of that is combined into one short book. I look at it and I think, how come it's under 250 pages? How did that happen? But I really wanted to keep it the story tight.
Well, it certainly resonated for me. I mean, there are certainly, as a Jewish person myself, whose family came from Eastern Europe, actually from Vilna, which plays in the book, it certainly resonates for anyone who's Jewish, whose family comes from Europe in any way, because even if our parents weren't there or our grandparents weren't there, it affected us psychologically, it affected our families. You know, this whole sense of Germany as being a very complex entity psychologically for all Jews, I think, is very powerful. But clearly, for people who are not Jewish, one would hope that the resonance would be to understand what it means to be cut off from your past in this radical way and to have to confront in your personal life the effects of evil.
Right. And I would even go further. I think this book is really a book for everyone who has contemplated the mystery of their parents. Because one thing, as soon as you have kids and as soon as they are paying attention to what you're saying, you realize that you actually censor what you say, what you think, and what you tell them about your past. Your children and we as children of our parents, we really don't know who they were before they had us. We could see pictures, we might hear anecdotes, but they really were very, very different individuals. Now that all is compounded by the fact that my parents were in this horrendous catastrophe, the Holocaust, which changed everything before and after for them. So the book is an exploration for a fit for anyone who is curious about what it's like to investigate their own family's past.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think I bet if any of us, any person thinks about their parents, we've all learned things about them in somewhat striking and unusual ways. You know, we find out things about them. Sometimes it's after they've died and we're going through their effects, or sometimes it's you meet someone who knew your parent or parents when they were young, and they have a completely different view of who they are than you do. You know, it's kind of opens a window onto who that person might be. And it's shocking, oftentimes kind of just mind-boggling to realize that your parents are not who you think they are.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I found out amazing stuff in this book doing research, you know, in archives and interviewing people from around the world, you know, and interviewing even my father, who told me things he'd never told me before. Like he tried smuggling at one point as a young adult, that my mother had possibly been on a spy mission during the war, and some documents seem to indicate that she was actually married before she met him, which is something that he didn't know.
Right,
and
right.
Mysteries pile on top of each other during the book. I think it's really important for me that that I've written a mystery series. I have 7 mysteries in the Nick Hoffman series, and I think the working as a fictional detective really helped me do real-life detective work. I think also my background in academia and as a researcher in that sense also made me really stubborn, really determined to follow every clue, every lead in writing this book, and to assess what was valuable and what was not, what was real and what isn't. I mean, the thing with memoirs, I know there are some people who say, well, it's got to be absolutely 100% true. I don't think that is possible. You can approximate the truth, and what I think you can go for is emotional truth, as close to the experience as possible. But you know, you read memoirs where people talk about what happened to them when they were 3 years old, and they quote dialogue around them, and you think, well, how did they remember that? They're going as close to what they can using the sources they can, and that's what I attempted to do. And when there were questions, I sought outside verification from historians and others. So my father tells some amazing stories about being a slave laborer for the Hungarian army and how mistreated he was. And I did research to find out what the treatment of Jewish slave laborers was during the war under the Hungarians. And it was even worse than he told me. So I knew then that I was on solid ground with what he was saying.
Right. No, I think that it was you did a very good job, I think, of, it was a complicated task for you, quite obviously, in terms of trying to figure out what really happened to them, because so much of that history is lost with the people who lived it.
Yes, that's really sad, but it is surprising that you can find and discover pieces of history just the same, even when people are gone. For instance, after my mother died, I discovered through somebody who knew her in Australia that she had published a brief memoir of her war experiences right after the war in Paris. Now, this is brand new to me. I'd never heard it as a kid. Nobody had ever mentioned it to me. And what she wrote about was astonishing, and the book offers a translation of it, and it's never appeared in English before. And so I was really thrilled to find it and to be able to put it in a book and offer it up as a piece of lost history.
Right, and actually pretty valuable, I would think, to scholars or anyone who is interested in what happened and how people lived through it. You also mentioned, I think, and this is sort of, I felt really, I felt for you, that she wrote a play in Brussels after the war.
Yes, that people have told me about acting in, but we have been unable to find a manuscript of it anywhere. And in fact, this play was also performed in London, and I was in London doing archival research and was unable to find any trace of her having been there. But accidentally, I mean, here's how amazing research can be. I accidentally found in a folder of someone's papers a letter she had written in 1946 to someone in London, which just blew my mind because I had no physical evidence of her life from 45 to 50. And here I am looking down at her very clearly distinguishable handwriting and thinking, this is a letter from my mom. And the people who own the archives let me keep the original, which I took home with me, and they just photocopied it because to them it wasn't valuable, but to me it was extraordinarily valuable. My mother had very big, very bold handwriting, and to see this letter, which was in itself not very extraordinary, but to see this letter appear, you know, some 60 years after it had been written really blew me away. I had a similar experience when I was in the International Tracing Center run by the Red Cross that has the millions of pages of documents from the Holocaust, and I saw and touched and held the prisoner card she had to sign as she was being processed into the Buchenwald concentration camp. I had no idea people actually had to sign things, but there's all these questions that were filled out for her, obviously, about education and background, and a description was put on there by somebody, and she had to sign an oath saying that the information was accurate or she would be punished. And even in this totally degrading, horrific circumstance, there is her signature, big and bold. And to me it said she was holding on to her humanity in the midst of the worst possible circumstances.
Yeah, no, I think some of the things that you uncovered were just shocking, even to realize that people who were being treated like animals were still... you know, every single thing about them was cataloged. It's an amazing concept to realize. It's just, it was very powerful, I think.
Well, here's the irony, you know, the Germans were sticklers for keeping records, so and were obsessed by detail, but if and of course that had its horrible outcomes, but if they hadn't been, if the Nazis hadn't kept such amazing records, I would not know the actual dates upon which my mother was transferred from one camp to another. I would not have these all these pieces of information that add up to a portrait that is larger than what I knew when she was alive, because she really did not speak about these experiences in that kind of detail. She couldn't. It was too painful for her.
Right. No, which seems to have been a very a common trait for anyone who survived. It's very difficult to talk about. And when you come to America and you want to start, you know, you're starting a new life, you literally start a new life.
Well, here's another thing I found out. I had never really gotten this, but my parents actually started over twice, because they lived in Brussels for 4 or 5 years after the war and started a new life there and had my brother. And then the whole thing about being that close to Germany, it just, and not knowing if there would be another war as the Cold War built, and many other circumstances led them to emigrate to the U.S. And so they had to start all over again. And, you know, I look back and I think, how did they have the energy or the courage to do that twice after everything that had happened
right
to them? That's one of the things that came out of all this research for me, is tremendous respect and admiration for my parents that I couldn't have had while they were alive because of all the different family issues we were going through.
Right. Well, it's clearly, it was difficult for you as a child, and much you needed to come to some resolution with them, which I think this book does.
Well, that's great to hear.
Well, it was a terrific book. I read many books, and this one I happened to pick up when I got it, and it captured me. You know, sometimes books do that, where you wasn't really intending to read it right at that moment, but I started reading a few pages, and you got me right away. So, it certainly resonated for me, but I also felt like I was on your journey with you. And it was complicated, and I think that you did a really good job of I admire anyone who can write memoir. I think it's very complex and very difficult to do and keep that balance between self and other. And I was very impressed with what you did here.
When I teach memoir, when I teach memoir, one of the things that I point out to people, make sure that they are thinking about, is that there has to be a balance between reporting and reflection. That you can't just tell what happened. That people are looking for more than just a recital of details. They want to know, what does this mean to you as the writer, and then they can decide what it means to them.
Right, and you need to have, but you do need the balance. I think that's very important, because if it's pure reportage, it's dry. If it's purely emotional, then it's self-indulgent and you really have no point of entry. I think that's a fair point, and I thought that you handled that. I mean, you know, you did a really excellent job of balancing the different elements that are needed in memoir.
I'm pleased to hear that, and I'm always pleased to hear how a book turned out, because there's that moment after it's finished, or it's really a long moment, where you're not entirely sure. Even though this is my 19th book, you know, there's always some doubt associated with a book, because how can you predict what people are going to get out of it and how they're going to react to it? You can't. And strangely, every book seems to have its karma.
Yeah, I think that's right. You don't know where it's going to go, and that's part of the journey, is finding out by sending the boat out into the world and letting it find its audience.
Exactly, which still happens despite the publishing world being in chaos. Books are still finding their readers and finding an audience and taking you to places you never would have thought you'd go. Like for me, the book is very much about going to Germany, which was the last place in the world I ever thought I would go to and I ever wanted to go to. I mean, you might as well have invited Luke Skywalker to the Death Star for spring break, honestly. I mean, it just seemed impossible. And then there I was, and I won't give away what my experiences were, but they really were mind-boggling.
Well, it was. I don't want to give it away either. I think that's what people will need to do when they read the book, is find out. And there's much more in this book than just Germany. I mean, that's just a stepping-off point and a point of where you can begin your story and then come back to. But I would recommend this book for anyone. I mean, you don't have to have a personal experience of the Holocaust. You don't have to be Jewish. I think that clearly this is a journey that resonates for lots of people. We've been talking to Lev Raphael, the author of My Germany, A Jewish Writer Returns to the World His Parents Escaped. I think this is a really wonderful book, and Lev, I really appreciate having you on to talk to me.
It was great fun talking to you today.
Thanks a lot. This is David Wilk for Writer's Cast, and thank you all. Bye-bye.